This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello and welcome to Natural Life. I'm Kim McCurdy. In this half hour, I'll be reading articles of interest from magazines like Mother Earth News and Hobby Farms to maybe help us to live a little more naturally. Today, I'll get started with Mother Earth News. This comes from the February-March 2024 issue. And this article is entitled Foster Phenomenal Fungi. Learn how to use a grow tent to improve your mushroom cultivation space. By William Padilla Brown. I embarked on my agricultural journey by delving into indoor hydroponics. It all began with my homemade deep water culture system housed in a Sterilite tote bin. To kickstart my indoor growing experience, I converted a closet into my first cultivation space. The space's design was rudimentary. It was mostly the hydroponic system and a light hanging from the pole where you'd hang clothes. However, as I progressed, I managed to accumulate savings and invest in my inaugural indoor hydroponic grow tent. Grow tents serve as an affordable, nurturing haven for plants, providing them with an easily regulated environment encompassing optimal temperature, humidity, and light levels. Designed to retain humidity, these grow tents also incorporate ports for efficient ducting and wire management. Consequently, this was the most economically viable method for me to commence my journey in cultivating mushrooms. Initiate your mushroom growing venture on a smaller scale, familiarizing yourself with the specific organisms you intend to grow. By doing so, you can gain valuable insights into their unique requirements for a flourishing life cycle. Additionally, starting on a smaller scale will enable you to gauge the potential yield achievable within a limited space. Once you grasp the yield potential within a confined area, it'll become easier to extrapolate and estimate the output in larger grow tents. This approach holds significant advantages, as any mistakes or mishaps encountered during the initial stages within a smaller tent can be rectified with minimal time and financial investment. Start with the basics. When cultivating fruiting mushrooms within grow tents, using plastic racks to hold your mushrooms offers several advantages. These racks not only facilitate easy cleaning, but also eliminate the risk of rusting that's associated with stainless steel racks in high humidity environments. For smaller grow tents, up to 5 feet by 9 feet, you can maintain adequate humidity levels by incorporating a retail humidifier found in most pharmacies. To streamline the management of your grow tent's temperature and humidity, invest in an environmental controller. This invaluable tool will liberate you from the constant need to manually monitor and adjust the conditions within your tent. Ideally, maintain a humidity level of around 80% to 90% for most mushroom varieties. As for temperature, a range between 55 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit is optimal for cultivating the majority of mushrooms. In my personal journey, I initially placed my grow tents in the basement as it provided a more stable and consistent temperature environment. However, as I progressed, I took further measures to enhance the temperature control throughout the year. I equipped the grow tents with portable air conditioners to combat heat during summer months and installed radiating heaters for the winter season. Radiant heaters outperform forced air heat sources in mushroom grow tents as they don't significantly reduce humidity levels, and humidity is crucial for successful cultivation. Choose your mushrooms. Before you dive into mushroom cultivation, you'll first have to decide what to grow. Here are some of the mushrooms I recommend for indoor grow tents. Oyster. Oyster mushrooms are among the easiest to grow and can thrive on a wide variety of substrates. They're known for their rapid growth and abundant yields. Oyster mushrooms come in different colors and have a delicate, mild flavor that makes them versatile for various culinary applications. Lion's mane. These mushrooms are known for their unique appearance, resembling a cascading white mane. They're relatively easy to cultivate and have the potential to produce a number of desirable fruiting bodies. Lion's Mane has a delicate flavor and a texture reminiscent of seafood, making them a sought-after culinary ingredient. Reishi. Reishi mushrooms have a long history of use in traditional medicine for their potential health benefits. They can be grown in a bag or container without the need for a humid tent, making them suitable for indoor cultivation. Reishi mushrooms have a woody texture and a bitter taste, often consumed in the form of extracts or teas for the potential medicinal properties. Piopino, that's spelled P-I-O-P-P-I-N-O. Requiring a slightly more technical approach compared with some other varieties, yet offering rewarding results, Piopino mushrooms have a rich, earthy flavor and a firm texture. They're often used in various culinary dishes, adding depth and complexity to the flavors. Shiitake. While a popular culinary choice, shiitake mushrooms can be messy to grow and grow tents. They require specific environmental conditions and can produce substantial amounts of spores, resulting in a messier cultivation process. Don't grow shiitake mushrooms in indoor grow tents unless you have a space for managing their needs. King oyster. King oyster mushrooms are rewarding to grow in grow tents. They can be cultivated alongside oyster and lion's mane mushrooms, but they have a distinct growth pattern. Instead of fruiting from the sides of the unicorn bag, king oyster mushrooms will typically fruit from the top, producing sizable meaty caps with a rich umami flavor. Cordyceps militaris is fairly easy to grow in a tent as it primarily requires temperature control. It grows in a bag or container, and its unique and fascinating growth pattern makes it an intriguing choice for cultivation. C. militaris is valued for its potential health benefits and is often used in supplements or as a medicinal ingredient. These mushroom options provide a range of flavors, textures, and growth characteristics, allowing for a diverse and rewarding cultivation experience. Get your grow tent. Once you know which mushrooms you'd like to grow indoors, choose a grow tent that'll align with your mushroom cultivation aspirations. Hydroponic grow tents are becoming a popular way to grow mushrooms indoors. They're relatively inexpensive and easy to set up, and they offer advantages over traditional retrofit or built mushroom farms, including more control over the growing environment. Hydroponic grow tents allow you to control the temperature, humidity, and light levels, leading to healthier and more productive mushrooms. When selecting a hydroponic grow tent, consider several factors before purchasing. Size. The size of the grow tent should align with your cultivation goals and the available space you have. Consider the quantity of mushrooms you intend to grow and ensure the tent can accommodate your desired yield. Shape. Grow tents come in various shapes, including rectangular, square, and octagonal. Choose a shape that suits your space and cultivation needs. Rectangular tents may optimize space utilization, while other shapes can provide unique advantages or aesthetics. Material. Grow tents are commonly made from waterproof materials or PVC materials. Both options have their benefits, such as durability and light reflection. When choosing the material, consider additional factors between materials and brands, such as tear resistance, light blocking properties, and overall quality. Ventilation. Proper ventilation is crucial for a healthy growing environment. The grow tent should have adequate vents or access points for fresh air exchange. This will help prevent the buildup of excess humidity and discourage the development of mold and mildew, which can harm the mushrooms. Mushrooms also produce carbon dioxide and need fresh oxygen to continually produce healthy, regular formed fruits. Lighting. Sufficient lighting is essential for promoting mushroom growth and development. Different mushrooms may have specific lighting requirements. Ensure the grow tent can accommodate the appropriate lighting setup, such as LED or fluorescent lights, to induce pigmentation in mushrooms or stimulate fruiting. Price. Grow tent prices can vary significantly, ranging from a few hundred dollars to several thousand. Consider your budget and choose a grow tent that offers good value for the features and quality you need. Balance your investment with the scale and goals of your mushroom cultivation project. Once you've chosen a grow tent, you'll need to set it up. First, place your grow tent somewhere that receives indirect sunlight. Next, set up the grow tent frame. Then install the grow tent cover, grow lights, ducting, and similar features. Follow this general order when putting together your grow tent, but also follow the manufacturer's instructions when setting up the components. Finally, you'll need to either prepare your mushroom spawn with a liquid culture or use a pre-made grain spawn and combine it with the right substrate for the type of mushrooms you're growing. Understand the growing requirements for the mushrooms you choose. Each kind of mushroom has slightly different light, temperature, and humidity requirements and will flourish given the right conditions. Best of luck on your growing adventure. Propagate and mycelate. William Padilla Brown is an author, teacher, and multidisciplinary citizen scientist practicing social science, mycology, phycology, molecular biology, and additive manufacturing. He founded and is the current CEO of Mycosymbiotics, a permaculture research and production business based in central Pennsylvania, focused on innovative, practical, applied biological science. William and his work have been featured on Fantastic Fungi, Vice, BuzzFeed, The Verge, Outside Magazine, and much more. There was another paragraph here I'd like to share. Mushroom terms explained. Stepping into the world of mushrooms and fungi may feel intimidating at first, even just from the new terminology you're sure to encounter. Here are some key concepts and words to learn, and you'll soon find mushroom cultivation is an easy, fun, and accessible activity. Cultivation, the intentional and controlled growing of mushrooms or fungi. It involves creating the optimal conditions for the growth and development of the desired species, including providing the appropriate substrate, temperature, humidity, and light. Fruiting, the process by which a mushroom develops and produces its fruiting body. It's the stage where the mushroom becomes visible and ready for harvest. Fruiting typically occurs when the environmental conditions, such as temperature and humidity, are suitable for the mushroom to complete its life cycle. Fruiting body, the visible part of a mushroom that we typically recognize and consume. It's the reproductive structure of the fungi, of the fungus, and is responsible for producing spores. The cap and stem of a mushroom are examples of a fruiting body. Harvesting, the act of collecting ripe or mature fruiting bodies from the mushroom cultivation. It involves carefully removing the mushrooms from their growing medium without damaging them, ensuring they're ready for consumption or further processing. Inoculation, the process of introducing or implanting mycelium into a substrate, or mycelium. It's done by transferring the spawn or mycelium to the growing medium, allowing it to colonize and eventually form fruiting bodies. Mycelium, the network of thread-like filaments that make up the vegetative part of the fungus. Essentially, it's the fungal equivalent of roots and serves as the feeding and nutrient-absorbing structure. Mycelium is usually hidden within the substrate or growing medium. Spawn, a substance that contains the mycelium, the fungal equivalent of roots, of a particular mushroom species. It acts as the starting material for growing mushrooms, usually in the form of grain or sawdust that's been inoculated with a fungus. Spores, microscopic reproductive units of fungi. They're equivalent to seeds in plants and are responsible for the dispersal and reproduction of fungi. Spores are usually produced on the surface of the fruiting body and are released into the surrounding environment. Sterilization, a technique used to eliminate or kill any unwanted microorganisms, such as bacteria or competing fungi, from the growing environment or the substrate. It helps create a clean and suitable space for the intended fungus to thrive. Substrate, the material on which mushrooms grow. A substrate serves as the nourishing medium for the mycelium. Common substrates include wood chips, straw, compost, or even specialized mushroom growing mediums. Unicorn bag, a specialized type of plastic bag used in mushroom cultivation. It's typically made of a breathable material that allows for the exchange of gases while maintaining a controlled level of humidity. The unicorn bag is used as a container for the substrate and mycelium. Its design and permeability allow for air circulation and moisture retention, promoting the development of healthy mycelium and fruiting bodies. The unicorn bag is often sealed to create a mini greenhouse effect, facilitating the ideal conditions for mushroom cultivation within a compact and easy-to-use setup. Let's stay with this publication and do a little bit of our Ask Our Experts, where readers write in complex questions and get answers from experts. This particular Question: Nix fungus gnats organically. How can I get rid of fungus gnats in my potted plants? To get rid of fungus gnats, you'll need to consider their lifespan, which includes eggs, 4 stages of larvae, pupa, and adult. Depending on the species, adults can lay up to 200 eggs. They lay eggs where fungus is growing, which usually corresponds with damp soils. The larvae feed for around 2 weeks, and they feed on organic matter and roots and can damage plants. When temperatures are low, this stage can last longer. They pupate near the soil surface for 3 to 7 days. Adults live a little over a week. Both larvae and adults can spread plant pathogens, such as black root rot, botrytis blight, fusarium wilt, pythium blight, and verticillium wilt. Here are some methods to addressing fungus gnats. Dry soil treatment. Lauren Fordyce, an urban and community integrated pest management IPM educator at the University of California, helps clients with growing houseplants and sustainably managing indoor and garden pests. For fungus gnats, the main driver is excess moisture. Spraying a pesticide isn't going to get rid of the moisture that's allowing the fungus gnats to thrive. Fordyce suggests a simple solution. Allow the top couple of layers of soil to dry out and consider improving the plant's drainage. With this method, fungus gnats won't have an opportunity to lay their eggs. Since adults only live around 8 days, your problem will dry up quickly. Carnivorous plant treatment. In addition to drying out plants, Holly Golightly, a student at Oregon State University, incorporated fungus gnat predators. She added close to 20 carnivorous plants to a 700-square-foot greenhouse and soon noticed the plants capturing dozens of tiny pests. While Golightly brought various carnivorous plant species into the greenhouse, the best at catching fungus gnats are the sundews and butterworts. Both have adhesive leaves that trap and kill tiny nuisance pests. A green thumb is needed for growing sundews and butterworts. Carnivorous plants need pure water, such as rainwater or distilled water. The mineral and chemical content of well water and tap water often kill them. Although carnivorous, these are still plants that require sunny conditions and may not be suitable for all indoor environments. BTI treatment. If people do want to go the route of pesticides, BTI, Bacillus thuringiensis, israelinensis, is naturally occurring soil bacterium that's used as a pesticide, Fordyce says. The most important part of treating fungus gnats is getting the correct subspecies. Subspecies israelinensis targets larval stages of certain dipterans, flies, which fungus gnats belong to. Other subspecies are also larvicides, but they target moths and butterflies. You just have to continually apply BTI until the problem is gone, Fordyce says. One way to incorporate BTI into your fight against fungus gnats is to purchase it in a powder form or as mosquito dunks and dissolve them in water. Then use that water for your plants. Other treatments. Other sometimes suggested treatments that aren't backed by evidence and don't address the root of the issue include diatomaceous earth, neem oil, and cinnamon powder or spray. Hydrogen peroxide is also a common recommendation, but the percentage needed to kill gnats could also harm the plants you're trying to save. So the best way to get rid of gnats is to keep the top few inches of substrate in your potted plants dry. Sticky traps or carnivorous plants are a good way to get rid of adults. BTI is the best and safest larvicide. That response was put together by Kenny Coogan. Let's switch publications now and we'll do some Self-Reliance magazine. This comes from the spring 2024 issue number 32. This article is called The Dreaded Dandelion by Rhonda Linkus. Sadly, dandelions have a bad reputation with those who struggle to maintain the perfect lawn. Appearing overnight, they invade many areas, creating a sea of yellow dots that quickly diminish into clouds of white fluff, scattering by leaps and bounds to reseed themselves and begin the process anew. On the other hand, this early spring edible is rocking it out in the culinary world. With a little olive oil and garlic, the greens can be sautéed into a tasty side dish, while the flowers, roots, and also the leaves can all be used for brewing tea. Another peculiar and sometimes unheard use for the flower petals is dandelion jelly. Dandelion jelly is easy to make whether you are new to preserving or not. Its pale yellow tint is like sunshine in a jar, and its flavor has a hint of honey fresh from the hive. It makes a unique gift and complements a warm piece of sourdough toast on any day of the year. If you are overcome with this misunderstood but valuable plant this spring season, put it to good use and add a batch of jelly to your pantry. Here's a recipe for dandelion jelly. Ingredients: 12 cups of dandelion petals, lightly packed, 4 cups of boiling water, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 box of powdered pectin, and 4 cups of sugar. Equipment: 6 half-pint jars with rings and lids, water bath canner or steamer, funnel, jar lifter, 3 kettles, small and medium and a large, large tongs, mesh strainer, and coffee filter. Step 1. Gather the dandelions with a colander or similar vessel, avoiding areas that could have been sprayed with pesticides or where animals have been kept. Next, cut the flower portion away from the stem. Be sure to keep the leaves and stems out of the mixture since they can be very bitter. Place the petals in a quart jar. Step 2. Pour boiling water over the petals. Allow them to cool and then place in the refrigerator for 24 hours. Step 3. Prepare the jars that will be used for the jelly by washing them if needed. Gather all of the items that will be used during the canning process and organize a work area. This is a very important step since the cooking and canning process can be a little chaotic. Step 4. Strain the flowers well and squeeze out as much dandelion tea as possible. A coffee filter placed inside a mesh strainer works well for this so that remnants of stems and leaves cannot penetrate the filter. Step 5. To avoid breakage in the preservation process, the jars must be heated. In a large kettle, heat enough water to immerse the jars and allow them to heat. In a smaller kettle, heat a small amount of water to immerse the lids. This prepares the lids for proper sealing later. However, overheating can damage the seals with certain brands. Therefore, the boiling point is not necessary for the lids, but is fine for the jars. Step 6. Place 3.5 to 4 cups of the dandelion tea, lemon juice, and pectin into a medium-sized kettle. Bring to a boil. Be sure the pectin dissolves completely. Step 7. Add the sugar and return to a boil while stirring. Boil for 1 to 2 minutes. Do not undercook or overcook the mixture. Step 8. Remove from the heat and ladle into hot jars. If using a water bath method, process for 10 minutes in boiling water. If using a steam canner, allow the steam to build to a strong, steady blast and process for 15 minutes. Consult your canning book if your location is above 1,000 feet in elevation for altered processing times. We have just a few minutes left, and it gives us time to do some Ask Jackie, where Jackie Clay Atkinson answers your canning, livestock, and homesteading questions. Rhubarb syrup. I've made most of the rhubarb recipes in your cookbooks, but primarily have used my rhubarb bounty for making wine. But I'd like to experiment with making rhubarb syrup. Other than adding the syrup to make a tasty drink, alcoholic or otherwise, what are some of your favorite ways to use rhubarb syrup? And if I decide to can the syrup in a pressure canner, what are the processing instructions? That was asked by Carol Elkins of Pueblo, Colorado. First off, you don't have to can rhubarb syrup in a pressure canner. As it is very acidic and you can add sugar, it is very safe to can in a boiling water bath. We use rhubarb syrup over ice cream and yogurt, as well as drizzling it on top of cheesecakes. I also mix it with apple juice for a refreshing summer drink. I make a great breakfast quick bread with peaches and also soak it just before serving with rhubarb syrup. It's pretty darn good when topped with whipped cream, too. Of course, that was from Jackie. Feeding chickens whey. We've just gotten back into chickens after a 30-year hiatus. Our chicks are about 10 weeks old. I know I used to feed them whey, but I can't remember how much and how early I could start them on it. With 3 goats and milk, I'm making a lot of farmstead cheese every week and would like to use the whey. Are they too young? That was asked by Joyce Sherman of Hornell, New York. No, your chicks are not too young to enjoy whey. What I do with my flock is to mix the whey with their dry food to start off with. Adults can just drink it up as a nutritious and tasty beverage. Mine simply love it and come running when they see me with the pail. Mulberry jam. I have a family member that's allergic to all citruses. This puts me in a jam because I can't share the bounty of my homemade jams with her. All the recipes I find for mulberry jam call for lemon juice. Do you know of any shelf-stable alternatives to lemon juice or any citrus I can use in my jam? That was asked by JB of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You might like to substitute this recipe for mulberry preserves for your family member and you too. Here's the recipe. 6 cups of mulberries, 1 tablespoon of water or more as needed, 2 cups of water, 3/4 cup of sugar, 1 3-ounce package of cherry-flavored gelatin such as Jell-O, 1 package of powdered fruit pectin. Mix mulberries and 1 tablespoon of water in a large pot. Bring to a boil. Reduce heat, cover pot, and simmer, stirring frequently until berries are softened. Mash well with a potato masher. If you don't want to keep the seeds in the preserves, press the puree through a wire sieve. Combine the water, sugar, gelatin, and pectin in a bowl. Stir until gelatin is dissolved. Stir gelatin mixture into mashed mulberries. Bring mixture to a boil. Ladle boiling mulberry mixture into hot sterilized half-pint jars, leaving 1/4 inch of headspace. Wipe the rims of the jars clean, then place a hot previously simmered lid on and screw down the rings without force. Process in a water bath canner for 15 minutes. I hope this does the trick for you. That was Jackie's answer. Saving seeds. Does it work to freeze short-lived seeds like parsnips and onions and such, or are they still only good for 1 year? I don't like being dependent on buying everything each year, yet I'm really tired of planting seeds that don't grow. If you do freeze them, does it extend their life for a long time, like longer-lived seeds or just marginally? That was a question by Anita from Brashear, Texas. Any seeds you freeze in an airtight container should stay good indefinitely. I know that onion seeds are supposed to only be good for a year, but a few years ago I had extra 3-year-old onion seeds in a box I had planned on sending to our friends who are missionaries in Uganda. I didn't want to send seeds that were not going to germinate, so I tested a bunch of them and got nearly 100% germination. Another old wives' tale, I guess. As for parsnips, I would just let a few stay in the ground. The next year, they'll come up and make lots of seeds for you. Real easy. From Jackie. Beans cross-pollinating. Will heirloom pinto beans, pole beans, Logan Giant, cross with heirloom Kentucky blue pole beans? I have very limited space to plant both kinds. That was asked by Roger Rowe of Vanceburg, Kentucky. While pole beans are quite prolific, you can usually get by, separating them by as much space as possible. Even a few yards will usually do the trick. And that was Jackie's answer. Well, we're just about out of time, so we'll wrap it up for today. You've been listening to another episode of Natural Life. I'm Kim McCurdy. As always, thank you for listening.